This episode is brought to you by Casella's Prosciutto Speciale. Learn more at casellasalumi.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we continue our trade series with a piquant look at the many faces of the spice trade, from the high price tag of saffron to the ubiquity of chilies and the potential ripple effect that farmer protests in India may have on the global spice market.
You know, farmers are protesting because they feel like their lives and livelihoods are on the line.
You find it in a lot of cured foods, like cured meat and Parmesan cheese. You also find it in ripening foods, like ripe tomatoes are very high in MSG. So there's sources of it all over the natural world.
Tune in to Meat and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. It's Tuesday, February 9th, 2021. We're recording remotely. I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host on Beer Sessions Radio. Well, we'll talk a little bit about barrel aging today. Our good buddy, Ben Keen, a writer and editor who's been a co-host many times with us on Beer Sessions Radio, is joining us. So, Ben, let's just say hello to us.
Hey, Jimmy. Great to be here again.
You know, I think you wrote an article for Hop Culture about the barrel aging at Fremont. So I think this is kind of your show today.
I did. That was a little while ago yet. It was before they released their most recent version of a beer called the Rusty Nail. And that was sort of the entry point into Fremont's barrel aging program, which I think is, if not the biggest in the state of Washington, where I am and one of our other guests is, it has to be, you know, up there.
Well, that's great. We're going to introduce the other guests. Jake, can you say hello?
Hey, Jimmy. How's it going?
And just introduce yourself, Jake.
Sure. My name is Jake Endress. I'm a co-owner of Crooked Run Brewing in Virginia. We're about half an hour outside D.C., and we definitely do a fair amount of barrel-aged beer, and happy to talk about it.
Great. And our other guest, Matt?
Yeah, I'm Matt Lincoln. I'm the Director of Brewing Operations for Fremont Brewing in Seattle, Washington.
All right. Well, here we are. It's February 9th, 2021. Ben, it's always great to have you on. It was the summer of 2015. You were in New York, and you were I was lucky to have you as a co-host that year. So whenever I can get you on, I'm always really thankful. So you're up in Seattle. I was thinking about barrel aging for a while. I think I read an article a month or two ago. The first question was, why barrel aging? Why not just Imperial Stout or barley wine or quad? And I remember you were joking about instead of dry January, you want it to be quaduary. Why do you think, you know, all the beers you've tasted, why do you think barrel aging, it makes a difference? Why are people so taken with it?
Yeah, I mean, I do think for sure that it has become fairly mainstream. You know, I remember when I first got into craft beers, you did have to hunt a bit. You know, I'm thinking I'm going to age myself, but, you know, 15 years ago, 16 years ago, if you wanted something that had spent time in a bourbon barrel most often, there was a bit of searching that you had to do. And now I think it's pretty typical for breweries of all sizes to release beers that have been barrel aged. And I think that extra ingredient adds a lot of complexity, nuance. In some cases, you know, depending on the length of time it spends in the barrel, it can also bring, you know, this bold intensity to beers that I think a lot of beer drinkers, especially here in the United States, appreciate.
Well, that's great. So let's go, Matt. So at Fremont, just tell us about your experience and how you got to be working with a barrel age program and what you're doing at Fremont.
Sure. Yeah, I started my professional brewing career at Goose Island Brewing Company. That was, you know, definitely got exposed to a lot of barrel aging. I still think their Bourbon County Stout is one of the best barrel aged beers out there. But yeah, I worked a lot with Bourbon County Stout, and you know, kind of when I started at Fremont, basically at the beginning, so which was 2009, and you know, we knew we wanted to get into barrel aging, and I kind of brought with me, you know, some of the tricks I had learned from Goose Island, and I think we originally started, you know, we took one of our this winter beer that we had done and put it into probably, I don't know, maybe we filled like 10 Heaven Hill barrels, 10 or 12 Heaven Hill barrels. And that was kind of the beginning. And we still make that beer, although it's a little bit different now. We've changed the recipe a little bit, but now we still make that one. That's our B-Bomb. We also make another oatmeal stout, bourbon barrel aged Dark Star. And then we've also kind of expanded, you know, those were our two that we started with. And then, like Ben mentioned, we have the Rusty Nail. And then we started doing more barley wines as well. So we've really gotten into making barley wine and barrel-aged barley wine. So that's kind of like some of the newer beers we've been making.
And what does barrel-aging do, you know, chemically or whatever, you know, artistically? What does it do to the beer?
I just think of it as kind of like layering on of flavors, you know. I mean, you get all the, and it depends what kind of barrel you're using too. I mean, we've used a lot of bourbon barrels. We've become really fond of Heaven Hill barrels, just because of the characters that they impart. I mean, it's not, you know, we've also used like Jim Beam and Wild Turkey, and we've used some local distilleries, Westland Distilling. But I think each particular spirit barrel and lends its own character. But I mean, we get so many different flavors out of a barrel. I mean, the beers when they go in are, you know, completely different from when they come out of the barrel. And we'll usually allow them to age in their age for usually about a year and sometimes even longer. But I mean, for us, it's just like, it's complexity. It's, you know, more of an interesting character. It's fun, and I think we all really enjoy drinking these beers too, which I think is key to it as well.
And then Jake, tell us about how you guys started doing barrel aging at Crooked Run in Virginia, and in particular, it's quite amazing that you still have your Black Friday is your big barrel aged beer release day, just like many other breweries nationwide.
Yeah, so my background was nano brewing. We had a three-barrel brewery for about half of the time we've been in business, which is almost 8 years now. So I didn't do a whole lot of barrel aging at first. But once we opened up our larger 10-barrel facility, that's when we got more and more into it. And we do basically two types of barrel-aged beers. We do high-gravity stouts and barley wines in mostly bourbon barrels, and then a few others. And then we do mixed fermentation beers in neutral oak, which are X wine barrels. And so with the higher gravity stuff, I tried some beers from Horace and was just blown away. And we wanted to do something like that straight up. And so we wanted to make, you know, these high gravity stouts and barley wines, 16 to 18% beers. And we initially were you know, kind of struggling to get them to ferment out and to get that ABV. It took us a little bit to figure out how to make that consistently. But we've been doing it for a couple of years now. And it's been increasingly a big part of what we release during the winter. We release usually one high gravity stout or barley wine in barrels per month. And they tend to be pretty more straightforward, less reliant on adjuncts. We use adjuncts, but we tend to do like cinnamon sticks or vanilla beans or coffee and focus on the high quality ingredients. But we have done some more out there ones. And those are a big part of our Black Friday. I think it's great that consumers understand that's a day when, you know, so many people release these beers, you know, Goose Island paving the way for that. And just, you know, we try to outdo ourselves each year. So next year, this year we're trying to do something kind of like Firestone, where we do a kind of cuvee type beer that's a blend of stout, barley wine, quad, rye wine, and then on the mixed room side, we're doing a lot of cool ship beers, and we're lucky enough to have some friends that have a very big for the area winery, and they've hooked us up with some very, very nice wine barrels for at first just a little bit of money, and then eventually just some beer during harvest season. That's been great.
And Jake, a question about your sour beer aging. I mean, what are some techniques you use to make sure the sour beer turns out well when you're barrel aging? Because you probably lose a lot of it in the aging process.
Yeah, when we first started doing this, I remember I had messaged James Howitt, the owner and brewer at Black Project, about doing cool ship beers, and he'd said if you are dumping a fifth of what you make, you're doing pretty well. And we thought we were going to lose a lot, and initially we did, but we kind of started to figure out things a little bit more. First off, aged hops are definitely your friends. There's a reason why lambic brewers use them. They're just a way to basically keep your lactic acid bacteria at bay while your Brett, PDO, and Saccharomyces yeast go to work. And the reason you need that is otherwise the beer is just going to get incredibly sour. And some people might like that, but it's definitely not my thing. And I don't think the majority of consumers are really looking for, you know, enamel stripping levels of sourness. And then another one we learned from some friends is the pellicle in the barrel is important. And you really don't want to move your barrels around once beer's in there and it's aging. Otherwise, it'll break that up. And then this was a really hard lesson. You really cannot do those beers in like spent bourbon barrels. We had this idea like, oh, when we're done using barrels for stout, when they're, you know, stripped and everything, we'll just use them as neutral storage for mixed room sours. We don't know what it is. My only guess is that maybe a higher level of charring is what's going on here, but they never really progress. There's something about those barrels that inhibits the bacteria, and they just don't really get sour. We lost a fair amount of beer learning that lesson. And the last one is kind of a weird one, but if the beers get kind of a sulfury aroma, you're on the right track. For whatever reason, that's a good indicator that the beer is going to progress in the right direction.
Wow. Ben, do you want to weigh in on this?
I think Matt probably would be a better one than me on the technical side of things.
To be honest, we haven't done a lot of cool ship. We've talked about it a lot, but it's something we haven't pulled the trigger on. So I refer to Jake on that one. But we have done we do a small amount of wild and mixed firm brewing. And that's an interesting point about the bourbon barrel, the second use bourbon barrel. And I think I can kind of echo that a little bit. You know, we've done a lot of fooder aging, and then once we're some of, you know, and we have one of our fooders use one of them as a Solera, and you know, we'll move out of the fooder into wine barrels or puncheons. And a lot of the time, and we have used some second use bourbon. And I think you're right. I mean, I think that's something we've also noticed, that we haven't seen, once it kind of hits the bourbon, it doesn't really move a whole lot. It kind of like stays in this one zone, the same zone it was in the punch or the fooder. So that is kind of interesting to hear that from you. That's great.
Matt, at Fremont, how many barrels, like oak barrels or wood barrels, do you guys actually have that you're working with?
Usually anywhere that we're kind of like emptying and filling throughout the year now. And, you know, it's usually around 1,500 bourbon and spirits barrels. So right around in there.
Wow. Now, when you guys at Fremont, how do the different spirit barrels, since Jake mentioned bourbon barrels, how do the different spirit barrels, like, you know, influence the beer? And do you choose, going back to what he said, do you choose certain types of spirit barrels for certain beers?
We do. I mean, a lot of what we've kind of settled into using for most of our brands, using Heaven Hill, and then anywhere from usually between 8 and 10 year old Heaven Hill barrels. And we've found that the age of the barrel actually has an impact for us. I know I've heard, I think there are definitely differing opinions on this, but for us, we appreciate some of the more nuanced character that we get out of the older barrels. Sometimes they seem to be a little bit less harsh and less, I mean, we get a little bit, once we rack out of barrels, we get a little bit less heat coming off the, in the finished beer. So that's always, that plays a big role for us. And then as far as different spirits makers, like we've had good success with Buffalo Trace as well. We find that we get similar results with Buffalo Trace. But I mean, I think we've found that with Wild Turkey, for kind of at the other end of the spectrum, like we've used Wild Turkey before, and we found that it imparts definitely much more of a kind of in-your-face whiskey character, much harsher. But then we found that if we leave the beer in barrel long enough, that kinds to mellow a little bit. I mean, we brought these Wild Turkey barrels in, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago or something. And we pulled beer out of there annually, taste it, see how it's going. And we decided, let's not dump it. You know, like, we didn't like it, but let's not dump it. Let's let it go another, you know, 6 months or a year. And we checked it back and we left that beer in barrel for about 3 or 4 years. And finally, we were like, wow, this is actually turning into something really interesting. And then we ended up subsequently using that into a small batch blend. Which we do occasionally. We'll do special projects where we'll pull, you know, it might be 3 different base beers in 3 different spirits barrels, or, you know, or up to 6 or 7, you know, and just kind of make a special blended beer. So,
yeah,
it does. I mean, I think you can get a lot of different characters from, you know, all different spirits barrels.
That's great. Hey, Ben, so back to your article. So you're in Seattle. What does Fremont Brewing mean to you? Like, is it a place that you go? Is it more the beers that you've been drinking over the years?
Yeah. Well, I like to say, first of all, Matt and Sarah, who founded Fremont, were actually two of the first people I met when I moved here. And so for that reason, I have a fondness for the brewery. But yeah, I live a couple of miles away and regularly swing by for beers. They do a great job of making, you know, a wide range of barrel aged stuff. They also have a huge fresh hop beer program in the fall, early fall months. And then just a tremendous amount of other great beers. So you always know that whether it's coming from the barrel cellar, whether it's one of their clean beers, whether it's one of their, what is it called? The Black Heron Project, Matt?
Yes.
Which are some of the mixed fermentation beers he referenced. There's just a tremendous amount of variety, and the quality, in my opinion, is right up there no matter, you know, what you like to drink. So it's hard to not to make it a stop when you're, you know, feeling thirsty. And
well, thanks, Ben. Appreciate that.
Well, on that note, let's go to Jake. You know, some breweries are making, you have to make a wide range of beers. I know that some breweries are making hard seltzer. You know, you're selling quenching, refreshing beers as well. How does the barrel age program fit into your overall kind of brewery identity?
Yeah, so our brewery is really heavily taproom focused. So when we opened up our larger place in 2017, we partnered with a restaurant and we had them doing the food within our space and subleasing, doing tacos, and we did the beer. And it was immediately a big hit. And it created this atmosphere where we sold like a ton of beer by the glass. And when you're selling a lot of beer by the glass, you need to have a wide variety of stuff to kind of satisfy everybody, because you're not drawing people who come into your place your primary customer is there for tacos and beer. They're not there for can releases, for bottle releases, et cetera. So having this wide variety, during the summer, we try to have just a classic Hef on tap. And we try to do kind of a little bit of everything. And that ensures that if you have a group of five people and one person is like, I don't like this, or I only like that, or whatever, you're not going to be like keeping anyone out because you don't do a certain thing. And that was just kind of the niche that we found. You can go to Hazemaker breweries where it's going to be 10 IPAs on tap and the customers are there for that. But for us, it was like, we should have like a very good barrel aged beer, very good Saison, good Pilsner, good IPAs across the spectrum. And with the barrel aged stuff, it became more and more what we did because we were pleased with the results. Our customers seemed to be liking what we were doing. And frankly, the margins on those beers are really good. They sell for a lot of money. So it started to become a bigger part of what we did for all those reasons.
Jake, I have in front of me, I have a Crooked Run, a bottle of the Nile barley wine style ale aged in bourbon barrels with Ugandan vanilla beans. Tell me about this beer. It's pretty great.
Thank you. Hell yeah. That beer I am really in love with. So basically, it's a high gravity barley wine, spent 26 months in bourbon barrels. And like Matt, we love Heaven Hill too. We use Heaven Hill for the majority of our barrel aged beers. And then we do a fair amount of double barrel aged where they start in Heaven Hill and then go into something else. But those, I believe, were in Heaven Hill barrels 26 months. And then they were conditioned on just the crazy level of Ugandan vanilla beans. And this was something that we were inspired to give a try when we did a collab with Barreled Souls in Maine, and they do a lot of barley wines and other barrel aged stuff. And they had done a beer with this huge, 1 pound per barrel of Ugandan vanilla beans. And we wanted to try doing it too. So we did this beer for our mug club where we took this, what was just a really great barrel aged barley wine, and condition it on, this crazy level of Ugandan vanilla beans. And those vanilla beans are really unique because they taste really just like straight fudge. They taste more like chocolate than they do vanilla. And it gives that beer like, a fudge Tootsie Roll quality to it that I really, really love. And the majority of that particular beer we released as just a straight barrel-aged barley wine, which was called Wisdom. And, we thought it was so good. It shouldn't really get any adjuncts, but we did want to create something special for a mug club. So we made that beer.
Oh, that's great. And Ben, in the intro, you were talking about the Rusty Nail at Fremont. Can you tell me more about it? I've never had any of the Fremont beer. So
yeah, I feel like that should be something that we fix, Jimmy, off air.
I'll take it.
Yeah, the Rusty Nail was a beer that was brewed for a anniversary party for a very popular, well-known bar out here in Seattle called the Pine Box, because it occupies a space that used to be a funeral home. And so Fremont brewed this collaboration, which started off as an oatmeal stout. And then it also has licorice and cinnamon in it. And then it spent a lot of time in bourbon barrels. And it It's a tremendously good beer. It's won awards. I think, you know, it's one of the beers for people who don't live in Washington, you know, that kind of put Fremont on their radar, in a lot of cases. And yeah, it's one of my favorite, from the barrel program, personally. It just, that licorice and that cinnamon, as Matt was saying before, just give it these extra layers, and it's, I don't know how much they use in each batch, but it's sort of subtle, you know, it kind of takes a couple of sips before your taste buds put it all together. And I think that's what makes it cool and fun to drink.
Matt, you want to talk about making the Rusty Nail?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's probably one of the bigger beers that we make. And it starts off, it's a 30 Plato beer, so pretty high gravity. We do, and for most of our beers, we actually do, for most of our barrel-aged beers, we'll do a double mash. So we'll actually do two rounds of mash, run it off twice and to get a full kettle. And when it's done fermenting, it ends. I think the finishing gravity is similar to what our pale ale and some of our lower ABV IPAs start off at. So it's definitely viscous. It has a lot of residual sugar in it. But I mean, I think that we try to balance that out with the barrel aging itself. Like we kind of design all these beers, you know, to go into barrel. And I think if you were to drink these beers before they go into barrel, they would not be super pleasant. They kind of need that barrel, that extended barrel aging, to have those kind of flavors meld out and have that have things balance out a little bit over time. But we'll age it in Heaven Hill barrels, 8 to 10 year old Heaven Hill barrels for usually about 18 months. And at the end of the 18 months, so we do use, Ben was mentioning the licorice, we use licorice on the brewer's licorice, which is kind of, it's a really weird thing. I don't know of any other licorice that looks like, it's like these sticks of licorice that we'll actually add during the brewing process on the hot side. And then before it goes into barrel, we will age some cinnamon on it. And then when we pull it out of barrel after the 18 months, we'll kind of make an evaluation if it needs a little more cinnamon. Lately, what we've been doing over the last several years, this is kind of part of, you know, how different processes evolve. But we decided we kind of wanted a little to brighten up the cinnamon character. So we've started adding cinnamon again right before packaging, so we can get this brighter quality of cinnamon that tends to really age nicely in bottle too.
So how long is the process from, you know, the first brew until you put it in bottle?
It's probably like 19 months, something like that, right around in there.
And how long do you think, what's the optimum time to drink it? Like how many years would you keep it?
I think optimally, no, I think this is really personal too, and super subjective, but I mean, for myself, I would say you can go 5 years plus, especially with this, since it's such a huge beer, it ages really nicely. But I would say for me, it's usually like a year or two in bottle. And I think that's when most of our beers really hit their stride. But I mean, they're fully drinkable right when they're bottled. But, you know, we'll often do, at least once a year, we'll do verticals and we'll start pulling things out of our cellars just to see how things are doing, especially when it comes time to brewing the next year's batch. You know, we'll kind of take a look at how things are aging and decide if we want to make any process or recipe adjustments. But I think consistently for myself anyway, I think, you know, 1 to 2 years in bottle, and it's pretty great.
That would be cool, Ben. One year I should join you and we'll sit in on the vertical sampling. How does that sound, Ben?
it would be a nice day as long as you don't have other plans.
Yes, just like you wipe your calendar clean, you know.
And pray for snow. Hey, we're off to a great start. We're going to take a short break and be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
This episode is brought to you by Casella's Prosciutto Speciale. Casella's Prosciutto Speciale is made in America following the time-tested traditions of Italy's Norcini, the itinerant butchers who traveled the countryside preparing, seasoning, and aging meat. Just like those dedicated artisans of old, Casella's Prosciutto starts with the highest quality ingredients. They exclusively use rare breed heritage pigs, including Duroc, Tamworth, Berkshire, and Large Black, which are pasture-raised by small family farmers across the U.S. Their slow, on-the-bone curing process follows the standards of the Italian Prosciutto Consortia and produces consistently gorgeous results. Casella's Prosciutto is elegant. It is marbled, delicate, and nutty. They value that each ham is unique from the next, showcasing the subtle difference between breeds, farms, sizes, and pigs. Casella's believes in the quality of ingredients, good pork, salt, and thyme. It's that simple. Learn more at casellasalumi.com.
Hey, 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 welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. Become a member and support us at heritageradionetwork.org. All right, Ben Keen, my good buddy, editor, writer up in Seattle now. We put together this little barrel aging show with Matt Lincoln from Fremont Brewing and Jake Endres from Crooked Run in Virginia. Is there anything that they've been talking about? Quite a lot about the barrel aging. Is there anything that you want to ask either one of the brewers? Because my head's kind of spinning, and I also that's because I'm drinking the Crooked Run Nile. But
yeah, I have two questions that come to mind. One of them, Jake kind of touched on before, talking about releasing these big barrel aged beers, which are typically more expensive than other styles. I have heard from some places, you know, the world has gone, the beer world has gone to cans in a big way. And I've heard from some places that bottle shops and liquor stores are less excited or less willing to carry the bomber bottle, you know, 750 milliliter format that these beers typically come in. And I'm curious to know, Jake and Matt, what your opinions are as far as packaging these beers and, you know, getting them to consumers. Do you feel like there's a switch to smaller bottles? Have you thought about going to cans? Do you not worry about it because you sell most of it out of the brewery?
Yeah, so we do 750s for our mixed room stuff, which is all bottle conditioned. And then we do 375s to open in the tap room for on-premise. And those typically are not for sale. We used to do keg conditioned as well as bottle conditioned, but we just didn't really like the results from keg conditioned. So we really try to avoid it when possible. We really like the effects of bottle conditioning for the mixed room beers. And then for the barrel-aged stouts and barley wines, we're doing 500 ml bottles. We do cans of non-barrel-aged stout. But in terms of consumer preference, especially retail, yeah, absolutely. Like, bombers have been on a steady decline for a long time. And I think it's kind of a shame because there's so many beers that I think I just really like that format for, especially some of these mixed room sours where, like, you know, they're more like a bottle of wine and you want to share it with people. And that's how we sell it for on-premise consumption. When we run out of our smaller bottles, we'll just sell the 750s for on-premise. And it really makes me so happy when I see a table full of people sharing a bomber of beer. It was hard to get people to catch onto it first, but you know, the more people are doing it, the more people see others doing it and they feel more, you know, interested or comfortable or whatever. And fortunately our production levels are not super high. So, you know, if we send some out in distro, we don't have to sell a ton of it. And we'll have some bottle shops pick up some 750s, but they'll typically buy a case of them and the shelf life on them is really good. So it's okay if they don't move super quick. I definitely think that the pandemic accelerated the kind of trend towards cans and away from bottles. People want quantity and they want a lower price point, and I don't blame them. It's been definitely accelerated by that, but that's the format we like doing, so we're gonna keep doing it.
That's great. And Matt?
This is something we've talked about a lot over the years, like what format to put these big barrel aged beers in. And we're still doing 22 ounce bombers, and we started early on doing the wax finish, and that's kind of become one of our things. So it's kind of differentiates ourselves with our in regards to our barrel aged products from the rest of our brands. Now, granted, I don't know. It's one of these things that as we've grown, it becomes more and more all time consuming. I mean, we'll start doing a lot of racking out of barrels towards the end of summer, and then we'll usually spend about 3 months straight hand waxing bottles, because for most of our barrel releases, it's like 150 to 200 barrels. So we're talking thousands of cases, all hand dipped, hand waxed. So it looks great at the bottom, but man, is it a lot of work.
What I'm going to say is not politically correct, but hand dipping bottles, thousands of bottles in wax, it's an argument for child labor. I know Ben and I, as dads, would be like, "Okay, let's get the kids. Let's get the kids on that one."
I would never have my kids do that. They would last for about 3 minutes, and then they'd probably burn the hell out of themselves. But that's something that we've been doing for years.
What is it then? Like, are you literally dipping the end of each bottle in hot wax? Are you dripping it on it?
Yeah, so we're dipping the end of each bottle. I should send you some video footage so you can actually see. We'll have, we'll bring in, a lot of the times we'll bring in seasonal help. So I'll have people come in and they'll sign on to, wax bottles for, every day for 3 or 4 months, which is... It is monotonous, but it is all for the love of the beer, And so that's kind of like, we've kind of hemmed ourselves into this corner of this particular type of package. But we've also discussed, moving to 750s or moving to smaller format. I mean, a lot of the time we get, I get frustrated with, like Jake was saying, I love sitting down and, being able to share beers. I love it when I can see other people, because it's a very, drinking beer is a very communal thing, right? But there's also, when it comes to these huge beers, sometimes I want to sit down and have a beer by myself at the end of the day or whatever, or just with maybe one other person and share it. I don't want to drink, a lot of this 14% beer. So we've actually talked about moving to a smaller format as well. But for now, we're sticking with the 22s. I mean, and I will, for us, we haven't seen much of a decline, because most, in bottle sales for barrel-aged beer, but I will say we do a very small amount of 22s of our core product, and those have definitely been tanking over the years. I don't think, you see less and less shelf space devoted to 22s, but we find that we're still, we still get pretty good pull with bottles for now. And I think the downside of using cans, I think there's just something special about a wax, about a wax tip bottle, especially at a certain price point, a wax and dip bottle. And with cans too, there's also the issue with the liners, potentially only having effectively a one year lifespan. So for a beer that we want to lay down and age for multiple years, it's really hard to do that in a can.
Well, I'll tell you, when you're just talking about, drinking beverages, I think that everything goes in cans, but you're right about a large format bottle, because there's nothing like, you can get sparkling wine in cans, but having a good bottle of champagne or bringing a celebratory bottle of wine or beer, that really does make the party. And I think that whatever we've been through, my eye is always towards the next party, which we're going to have.
exactly.
Sometimes
we actually started doing magnums this year. So we're doing a small amount for each of our releases. We're doing a small amount of magnums, which is super fun.
Wow.
And, you know, talk about, you know, going to a party with a giant ass bottle of beer. It's really fun.
Wow. Hey, let's go back to Jake. Jake, I also have a bottle of your Drupalette. It's a golden sour with raspberries, frambois lambic, spontaneous fermented cool ship sour ale. Tell us about that beer. I'm switching us back to sours for a minute.
Sure. Yeah. So it's a long description, but basically it stems from the fact that lambic is a protected regional term, you know, like champagne or Parmesan. So, for all intents and purposes, this is the frambois, which is heavily fruited, cool ship, fermented or cool shipped sour. And so this is our first lambic style or lambic inspired beer that we've released. And it is under our native culture sub-brand, which basically means no commercially available yeast, all Virginia grain and all Virginia fruit. And so we did this beer with raspberries from a farm outside of Richmond, and then grain that was actually grown by our friends that have a farm brewery called Wheatland Spring, and then malted in Charlottesville, Virginia. And then it was cooled and inoculated in our cool ship, aged in Virginia wine barrels, neutral oak, and then re-fermented on these raspberries. And basically, the term is method traditionnel, but it's a designation that some American brewers came up with that means that it follows all the guidelines of lambic beer production. But again, we can't call it a lambic. And this is, we released two at the same time, a Creek style beer called Garth. These were our first releases, and I really can't wait to release more of them.
That's great. You just made me think about your location. I mean, I can picture Seattle where Fremont is, but when I heard about Crooked Run, it says Virginia. So tell us about your little region a little more. Are you near Charlottesville? Are you near farms?
No, we're near DC, but so we're in Loudoun County, and Loudoun County is, so it's based on median income. It's the richest county in the U.S. And we have this really strange dichotomy of like very, you know, a lot of wealth, but on the eastern end of the county, it's a lot more suburban as you get closer to DC. And on the western end, it's a lot of very beautiful farmland. And so we do have Virginia farms, and a lot of them are producing products for local retail markets, which is pretty cool. And our location that we create these cool ship beers at is our original Nano Brewery location. And we have a brewery garden outside of it. It's in this really cool retail space. There was this old lumber mill. So it's this giant wooden complex. It's like multi levels, and it's, you know, very, very interesting looking. And so we're in this little space. It's this little hole in the wall where we started. And we have a three barrel cool ship that our friend fabricated for us. And so we brew the beer there, and we have gotten a lot of good results. Going back to one of your questions earlier about just minimizing the amount of beer you have to dump. We thought, you know, we had this brewery garden where we had been pitching yeast from previous batches, other sour beers and stuff, which was hopefully going to give us a good like microbiome of yeast and bacteria around our brewery. And by doing three barrels at a time, rather than 10 barrels, it's like, hey, well, if you lose a batch, it's only three barrels of beer. We started doing it there. We also have a bakery next door, and we just got really good results. And we thought, you know, why mess with that? So we brew them there. They go in the cool ship. And then after it's cooled overnight, we pump them into barrels and then take the barrels over to our larger facility where they age.
All right. Hey, Ben, did you see you had a second question also?
Yeah, I did. I wanted to ask Jake and Matt to talk a little bit about blending, because it seems like both with you know, stouts and barley wines, and also with sour beers. As your barrel program grows, you're not releasing, you're not necessarily releasing beers that, you know, come from single barrels. You're putting them together from a compilation of dozens or hundreds of barrels. So how do you, as brewers, kind of develop that skill set and sort of figure out how to, you know, come up with the best final product?
Good one. Matt, you want to start with that?
Sure. Yeah, I'll start with that. I think that a lot of it for us kind of came from just trial and error, especially as our program kind of naturally, organically grew. Like I said earlier, we start off, you know, with 10 bourbon barrels, and we're up to like 1,500 now. So, you know, it kind of gets to a point where we'll put in for some of these blends, it'll be like 150 or plus bourbon barrels, if not more. And for the most part, we kind of changed things up a little bit this year, but we'll try to get an even blend from several different brews. Representative barrel samples from each will all be tasted. We used to taste every single barrel. We've kind of streamlined that a little bit as our quality department has grown and as our, you know, as our experience level has grown as well. But then one thing that we did start doing years ago was started blending or holding back from each year. We'll hold back a certain percentage of barrels to be used in next year's blend. So essentially for most of our blends, you know, let's say for our B-Bomb, which is one of our first barrel-aged beers, we'll actually we'll hold back about 10% of one year's batch for the next year. That'll go in. So we'll end up with kind of like this blend of year-old beer and two-year-old beer, the majority being 1 year and then maybe 10% being 2 year. And we found that this just kind of adds, you know, for these beers, it's all about like complexity and layers and stuff. So we found that this would just add with this extra layer of aged complexity and something that we really just kind of grew to like. So that's kind of what we've been doing for several years. Some of our, like Rusty Nail, we don't do because that has an extended aging period, we don't really hold on to too many older barrels, but we do blend a little bit of some age component in there as well.
And Jake?
Yeah, so kind of similarly, what we do with the stouts and barley wines is we'll age some of it in steel, which basically means just throwing the beer uncarbonated into kegs and letting it age that way. And the reason why we do it in tandem alongside the barrel aging, is when it comes to creating the final blend, sometimes the stuff coming out of barrels can be pretty hot. We give all of our barrels a soak with 180-degree water before using them, so it's not like there's bourbon sloshing around in them. But they can still get pretty hot just from what's in the staves. So that's one thing that helps. And then for mixed room stuff, that's where blending gets like pretty serious, and it gets pretty time consuming. I'm lucky enough to have a great production team that has better palates than myself. And we'll sit down and work our way through it, but they're really fantastic at doing it. If you're just getting into making some mixed room beers, you're not going to blend something that sucks into something else and make it good. It's just not going to happen. So just throw it away.
Yeah, I will second that, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And furthermore, like, if you have like really funky Brett character, that ain't going away. So it's probably just going to get worse over time. Honestly, I am not a fan of funk in, mixed room beers really at all. We go for lots of Brett character, but it's all like jammy Brett, like to the point where like even our non-fruited beers sometimes taste like they have fruit. And that comes from healthy Brett that isn't stressed out. Shooting for just having good beer in general and then blending to taste, I will say one little trick is if you have some barrels, they're not quite as good as some others. And obviously you're always going to have ones that are better than others, but you know, using some of the like second tier barrels to make heavily fruited stuff, because you know, the star of the show there is fruit and not so much the base beer. We'll use some of the best barrels to do dry hopped golden sours, which, I really like a couple of these we put out, but, yeah, I mean, garbage in, garbage out. With blending, you know, take your time and just figure out, and also having lots of different barrels, lots of different years to work with only increases your odds of coming out with something that's good.
Well, Jake, that makes a lot of sense. Like the Solera method, you're mixing difference, but just quick, you clarifier, you said when you were working with the barrels, the bourbon barrels, you said it gets pretty hot. What do you mean by what gets hot? I don't understand that.
I'm sorry. Yeah. You can get like kind of just alcohol heat. You know, if you're pulling a lot of bourbon into the beer, out of the barrel, it might taste a little boozy, after, you know, a year. And having some like just steel aged base beer to blend in and kind of cut it a little bit can help if that happens. And it's kind of unpredictable. I mean, like sometimes everything pans out well, and then other times we'll taste the barrel and it's like, damn, this has got a lot of bourbon or whatever else we're using. So yeah, having that in your back pocket is pretty helpful.
Okay, now I'm going to wrap it up. We're going to ask each of the guests one question, the same question. We'll start with Ben. The beer we have not mentioned yet, what is a barrel age inspiration you'd like to share with our listeners?
A barrel age inspiration, like you should go try it?
Sure, or a beer that we should try.
Well, we were talking about this before I think we started recording, but talking about wine barrels as a possibility. And I tried a beer not long ago from Ferment Brewing, not Fremont, confusingly similar, which is down in Hood River, Oregon. And they aged a quad in red wine barrels. And I found that to be really eye-opening and delicious. And so I would say quaduary is over, unfortunately. But if you find a wine barrel aged quad, give it a try.
Good one. Jake?
Oh man. Well, I would say, you know, probably on the sour side, there's a brewery in Virginia that we're big fans of called Pen Druid. And they do a lot of mixed room stuff and barrel fermented stuff that is really fantastic. On a larger scale, we're big fans of Allagash. And it's just great to see a lot more of Allagash's mixed room sours available. You know, 5-6 years ago, most of them were pretty hard to find. And at this point, a lot of their stuff actually sees multi-state distro. And that's pretty cool.
Cool. Matt?
Yeah, I think of that with Allagash. They make some pretty awesome stuff. I would probably say good friend of mine that I used to work with at Goose Island, Phil Wymore, owns Perennial Artisan Ales in St. Louis, and I'm always stoked to try any new barrel aged beer that those guys come out with, because I think Phil and his crew are making some really awesome beers. I know Barrel Aged Abraxas is a personal favorite of mine. Great beer. There you go. And then I guess on the sour side, this is kind of a classic beer, but one that I find no end of inspiration of, and it's Boone Goose Mariage Parfait. Probably one of my, if I think of like one of the most inspiring beers I've ever had, and is especially when it comes to sour beer, that is really high on my list, as kind of like, for me, one of the pinnacles of, you know, goose and wild fermentation, spontaneous fermentation.
Absolutely. And that beer is super easy to find, at least in Virginia.
Oh yeah. It's great. I love it that you can get that beer anywhere. And I think, you know, drinking, I remember drinking that in Belgium. It was probably one of the most sublime moments of my life, actually.
Wow. Well, you guys, this has been a really great show. Bennett, anything that we did not talk about that we should have?
I mean, probably, but, you know, we got to get to an hour.
Well,
we don't have enough time to cover more.
Well, this is really great, man. We're looking forward to just getting the show up. When you hear this, it's going to be the end of the week in February 2021. Big shout out to our guests. Thank you so much, Jake, Matt, and Ben, for joining me on Heritage Radio Network. Thanks to our engineer, Armin, and intern, Caroline. I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host on Beer Sessions Radio. We'll catch you next time. All right. Woo. Okay. Thank you.
Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like. Tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.